While it may be winter here in the U.S. and freezing in parts, it's summer in Australia, which means it's hot and people are jumping in the ocean. Well, recently, Ben Brock Johnson, host of the podcast Endless Thread, the show featuring stories from the online community Reddit, heard about something disturbing in the ocean.
Okay, my name is Dr. Teresa Corrett. I've spent my career so far researching the deadly and dangerous.
A few years back, Dr. Teresa Corrett was underwater in full diving gear off the Great Barrier Reef in Australia. Dr. Corrett's research is difficult because before she can do her research, she needs to find her research subject.
They are so hard to track down. They're an invisible animal in an ocean. That's not even needle in a haystack. That's, you know, needle in a forest.
On this particular dive a few years ago, she thought she'd found the needle in a forest. She always makes efforts to protect herself from her special research subject, including special diving gear. But on this dive, she found a flaw.
We were fully covered with gloves, full suits, hoods, the whole lot. I had come up from a dive and was getting into the boat. And as I put my hands up onto the boat, actually a bit of water washed down in between my glove and my suit. And a crazy sort of freak accident, a piece of tentacle actually washed down the inside of my suit with that water.
Right here is where Dr. Corrett has a big uh-oh moment.
I feel like I've got hot kind of stabbing pokers being prodded into various parts of my body, like random. None of it really makes sense.
She realizes something very bad has just happened. So does her research partner, Jamie Seymour.
Well, he said, right, well, we're going to hospital now. We have to go now. And the drive is not long, maybe 10 minutes. But by the time we had got to the hospital, I was literally on my hands and knees trying to get myself to a hospital bed.
There's actually video of what Teresa Corrett is going through.
Oh, it comes in waves, so every now and then I can kind of talk and...
They do administer similar amounts of painkillers as you'd give someone who's in a near-fatal car crash. I had about five times the amount of morphine for my body weight. And just this feeling of not being able to sit in my own skin, like I just wanted to take my skin off. I just couldn't be in my own skin. Everything just hurt. Like your body feels like it's betraying you. You know, when am I going to be free of this? And am I going to be free of this? You know, it's that, like I said, feeling of potential doom, which is just very, very scary.
This feeling of potential doom. This is, weirdly, something that is echoed around the planet by people who have been hit by the same animal. Teresa's research partner, Jamie, has been hit too. And his feeling of impending doom was so bad, Jamie says he asked for a cure no doctor would administer.
And we had a film crew there. So pretty much the whole 18 or 24 hours is on film. And I don't remember any of it. If someone had given me a gun, I'd have just gone, thank you, I'm off the planet.
Jamie and Teresa are experts in their own very specific area of focus, toxinology. They study all kinds of venomous animals. But the one that Jamie has the most love-hate relationship with, hands down, is this one.
I'm afraid to try to pronounce it myself, Irukandji. I'm not sure how to say it.
That's not bad. That's not bad. All you need to do is put an Australian accent on it.
That's not a knife. This is a knife.
Yeah. Right? And sort of just, you know, sort of make it sound really bad and come up with Irukandji.
It's a whole class of small box jellyfish, and the world is still learning about them, where they are, and what they do to you. Box jellyfish are, well, box-shaped. And box jellies, of which there are 50 species, are powerful swimmers.
When you think of normal jellyfish, think of them as like the little Priuses of the car world. And when you're thinking of box jellyfish, think of them as a Formula One GPs. Now, most people think of jellyfish and they swim around and they blunder into things and catch prey. Big box jellyfish actively hunt their prey and track them down. Irukandji actually fish. I mean, these are seriously sophisticated animals. So to give you some idea, a box jellyfish has 24 eyes, of which 12 of them are image-forming. So they've got lenses, pupils, and retinas.
Whoa, and they all... I didn't know that. I didn't know jellyfish could see.
Oh, these guys do. Box jellyfish do. The eyes look inwards. So they have 360-degree vision looking through themselves.
stings from irukandji give rise to something called the irukandji syndrome, which is a strange combination of what starts out as a tiny pinch and builds into days of vomiting, extreme pain, heart attacks, lung problems, and the weirdest symptom of all, unique among the venoms of the world, a creeping, crescendoing sense of impending doom. Jamie says that irukandji syndrome is interesting, too, because it's attributed to stings by smallpox jellyfish all over the place, both geographically and genetically.
In Australia alone, we have good data for at least 8, possibly 10 species of smallpox jellyfish that give rise to irukandji syndrome. Now, depending on the size of the animal, whether you're stung by the tentacle or whether you're stung by the body of the animal, whether the animal is young or old, whether it's from Cairns or Townsville or Weipa or somewhere else, is going to depend on how you are going to react. It can be as mild as, I don't feel well, through to, you're going to die.
That's really interesting. Why is that? Why does it vary so much?
Because they're feeding on different species of fish, we think.
Whoa. So what they eat impacts the venom?
Yeah. Then if you skip out of Australia and go to any coral reef area anywhere in the world that lies between the Tropic of Cancer and the Tropic of Capricorn, you get irukandji-type animals that give rise to irukandji syndrome. And they, again, all have slightly different venoms. We know that in around 10 to 15% of cases, it is going to get worse than just pain. You're going to end up with what we refer to as pulmonary edema, so fluid on the lungs. You could end up with increased blood pressure. A healthy adult has got a blood pressure of 120 over 80. We've had irukandji patients where their blood pressure goes to sort of, you know, 2, 210, 220 over maybe 100. And what that does is load up the pressure in all your veins and arteries. And if you have a weak spot somewhere in an artery, and if it happens to be, for example, in your head, and it blows, we can't save you. And the two deaths we've had from irukandji syndrome anywhere in the world have been exactly that.
There are cures that exist. They're just inconsistent. Here's Teresa again.
When we don't know, you know, nearly enough about the venoms and how they're working, there's no one treatment fits all because we're literally dealing with it, you know, a large amount of different species and they present so differently as well in patients.
There's only one commonality among people who have been stung, the doom part. In the beginning, Jamie couldn't figure out whether it was physiological or psychological.
I originally thought all of this was psychosomatic and there was a psychological component to it. The doctors are basically going, well, look, we cannot give you any more morphine because if we do, we're going to kill you. So you're just going to have to ride this out. So, you know, it's psychosomatic. God, this is going to go wrong. What's wrong? Now, I've been there 11 times. I know exactly what is going to happen and that feeling is still there.
There have been multiple reports of people with irukandji syndrome asking the doctor to straight up euthanize them, even when they understand intellectually how ridiculous of an idea that is.
This feeling of impending doom, we think it's sort of like a flight or fight response. So that if I scare you, you get a big adrenaline rush. And so what happens is your blood pressure goes up, your heart rate goes up, and your body's response is, get out. Something's going to go wrong. That's what we think happens with irukandji venom when you're stung. That not you get this release of adrenaline, but not just a little bit for half a second, but a lot of adrenaline over a period of 15, 20, 20 hours, 24 hours.
Part of why Jamie and Teresa have been studying these creatures in Australia is because there's an impact there. They represent a friction point for the local tourism economy. It's pretty contentious.
So it's not an animal that, by and large, goes backwards by the impacts of humans in the environment. It goes the other way. And as we put more and more people in the water, more and more people are going to get stung.
Are there any positive things that could come out of the study of these jellyfish?
Oh, absolutely. For example, if we go back to big box jellyfish, we're pretty certain we've got a component out of the venom from big box jellyfish that will cure arthritis. We can certainly cure arthritis in mice with components of that venom. And one of the things that we think that we can get out of irukandji venom is switching on, if you will, inflammation channels in the human system.
Jamie says the complexity of irukandji venom and its connection to the human immune system means it could be potentially used for everything from irritable bowel syndrome to asthma, We just have to get better at understanding the group of jellyfish whose stings result in Irukandji syndrome.
What's your, like, dream scenario there?
The one that I really like at the moment that we're playing around with is this potential cure for arthritis. I mean, can you imagine somebody, if you were saying to them, okay, we can maybe get rid of 70 to 80% of your pain from arthritis? I mean, that to me would be phenomenal. It really would. You can bury me in the ground and I'll be a happy man.
Whether or not a miracle drug made from Irukandji venom ever surfaces, Jamie Seymour and Teresa Corrett seem optimistic their research will continue. The reason? They say that as climate change impacts ocean environments, Irukandji jellyfish are expanding their territory from the tropics north and south. For Here and Now, I'm Ben Brock Johnson.
Ben Brock Johnson, host of the podcast Endless Thread.